The Book Nook on WISO was presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from Wright Memorial Public Library, Clark County Public Library, Tipp City Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Washington Centerville Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WISO. I'm Vic McCunis. It's my pleasure to welcome to the program today James Wilbur. He joins us on the telephone in North Carolina. He's got a new book out. It's called A Pocket Full of Nickels and Related Stories. Welcome to the program, Jim.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me on, Vic.
What's the story here, Jim? What made you decide to write this collection? I'm guessing some of these stories maybe go back a few years.
Oh yeah. I've been writing pretty much all my life. I studied English in college, and my mother expected me to become a writer because I was always writing as a kid, and all through school. My eighth grade English class, all I did all year was write a novel because it was not very good, but. My teacher, it's a long story, but anyway, because of a scheduling screw up, I ended up in a class that they deemed below my capability. I'm not saying it was or wasn't, but she was just like, you can do whatever you want this year. And I was like, I want to write a book. So that might have been the beginning of it. Ever since then, I just write all the time, and I've never really tried to publish. Most of my professional career is as a musician in the band Superchunk. So writing is, kind of it's a cross between a hobby and a therapy session. And I think I'm closing in on 60, and I think I'd had enough people ask me about, well, what do you write? What are you going to let anybody read it? Kind of thing. So, and now the technology for self-publishing is so, not only easy, but like the product that you get is kind of, decent. It's not, you know what I mean? It's almost like it's similar to what goes on in music now. You can record really good sounding records at home. You don't really need to go into a studio to get, a level of polish. So there was that. And I think it was just, that collection of circumstances led me to finally just put out, this group of stories.
Yeah, some people are making movies with their phones. I hear what you're saying.
Yeah,
Yeah. It's a do-it-yourself kind of world.
Yep, and it always has been for me.
Based on reading these stories, I'm going to guess that maybe you grew up in Connecticut?
Yes. You nailed it.
Because it seems to haunt you.
The stories are not autobiographical, obviously, because they're kind of
I hope not.
Wacky. They're a little wacky and murderous at times.
Uh-huh.
What I was getting at, I think, I write to figure out what I'm writing about rather than to, get a point across, because I'm of the school that fiction should ask more questions than it answers. So I my writing is sort of, like I said, it's sort of therapeutic. It's also sort of like a companion, something to do that keeps you company. I struggle. As somebody who grew up in the Northeast, I moved to North Carolina to join this band originally for just 3 months, but I ended up never going back. And there's a yearning to be back there. My family is there. And where I grew up was beautiful. It was a tiny little village on the coast with no stop signs. I remember when they were putting in the sewer system. I mean, it was pretty rustic. And beautiful and untouched. So writing about it was kind, I got drawn to that kind of through, nostalgia and just, thinking about home and what makes home home. So there's that. Thematically, most of the stories are, they turn on the concept of home and what it can mean and how it's important and how you can lose track of it.
Mm. I was looking at a photo of my father who died a number of years ago, and I looked at it and I thought, oh man, he looks just like I do. And that really freaked me out. And let's talk about your first story. Everyone knows.
Yeah. Well, you kind of encapsulated the main theme there.
Yeah.
But also that in that story, it's a story about an adolescent boy basically spending time with his father for a day, and then his mother. But that doesn't really explain what the story is, but the father in the story is a writer, and my idea there was, you know, kind of in a way to tie the whole book together was it could be, you know, vaguely, I wouldn't say that this is actually what it is, but like maybe the father's writing is what you read afterwards, you know, and throughout the rest of the book, insofar as it's implied in the story that the father is, you know, suffers from some sort of, to one degree or another, a mental illness. But his writing is how he copes with the world and himself. And that, you know, thematically in the stories, language and writing is both like a salvation and a curse, because it's, a lot of times it's very unreliable at conveying true meaning or what you're actually thinking. Mm. And so throughout all the stories, there's lots of, you know, overheard conversations, misheard conversations, unreadable notes and writing and foreign languages being spoken at strange moments. You know, it's just like that. I mean, I kind of hammered that over the head, I think, a little bit. And I mean, I don't know if the reader will, you know, cotton to that right away, but that definitely was in my mind as I was writing the stories.
Well, Jim, I'm not a musician, but I've listened to a lot of music. And for me, a big part of music is the silent spots, and we have to fill in the spaces with our own imaginations and fill in the gaps. And I found that with your stories, there's a lot of space there where we are almost forced to go, oh, okay, I think I understand, or I think I know what's happening.
I'm happy to hear you say that. I don't want to say foremost in my mind, but it was my intent to leave out a lot of detail that would cause someone to have that response that you just described. And that maybe does come from music, because, you know, music is information that is conveyed without language. I mean, if you remove the lyrics from a song, it's still, you've got to, you know, that communication is wordless, and it can be quite, you know, deep, moving, or humorous even, or, I mean, you can get a lot just of emotion from just sound and the way it changes. So that might be where that impulse in my writing comes from. I don't know, but I intentionally left out large, you know, elements of not necessarily plot, but, you know, detail. Like I didn't want to like explain everything and explain every action that the characters performed.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I wanted it to be kind of like almost dreamlike. You know, like something happened. I'm not sure what it was, but it was really important.
Very much so. All these stories have a dreamlike quality. And let's talk about the second one, because this one has a ghost.
Yes. And it's a ghost story.
Uh-huh. I mean, yeah.
That was my, you know, I wanted to write a ghost story. I wasn't quite sure how it was going to happen. But that one probably came the quickest. And it was also the last story that I wrote for the collection.
It's called Something Changed. I love this little boy and this house. I have been in houses like this.
I have too.
Yeah, yeah. It's just like, it's like, whoa. You walk in that place and talk about ghosts. I mean, every piece of furniture has them.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, growing up, my mother was an antiquer, and she would take me to estate sales and, you know, antique stores. And I mean, that's as far as the autobiographical element is in the story. But, you know, it's a magical thing for a little kid to, like, be surrounded by, you know, just innumerable objects and old things that each one has some sort of, like, story behind it. But, you know, I mean, I really just wanted, the image that came to me first was of the boy in the car with his mother driving down a wooded lane and showing up at a house.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so from there I had to, like, work backwards and figure out, you know, why are they there? And, you know, what happens when they get there. And it was one of those things, like, as I was writing it, in all the stories, I'm not quite sure how I'm going to end it or how it's going to end, but the story itself tells me when it's over. And it's either miraculous or lazy, but I get to the last line and I'm like, oh, that's it.
Understood. The book is A Pocket Full of Nickels and Related Stories. James Wilbur wrote it. He joins us on the phone in North Carolina today. So you start off sometimes with a kernel like that. You had that image of them going down this road, and then you kind of just, like, fill in stuff around it until it turns into something, and then it says, okay, I'm over.
Yeah, and the process can take years. That story took about a year and a half, which was pretty short for me.
Oh, wow.
But I'm a lazy writer. I write every day, but sometimes often it's for 10 minutes, 15 minutes. You know, it's just like I get that, and it's usually right after I wake up. That's the most productive, you know, moment. It's like before my brain has started really questioning itself, I guess is the best way I could say it. It's just like it's not that I'm fresh. It's that I'm not overthinking too much. And that's when, like, usually the good stuff comes out for me. If it's good, but it's the stuff I like. I mean, I'm not saying it's good. I'm saying the stuff that satisfies me the most comes in those moments.
And if you're doing it then, you're still kind of in that dream state. You're still kind of okay.
But you know, I certainly don't want – I mean, I appreciate that. And it's my intent to have it be somewhat dreamlike, but I also really, I'm always trying to make it seem at least plausible, not necessarily realistic, but plausible within the context of the rest of the story. I want it to read like a documentary almost, and not be, you know. Yeah, I want it to read like nonfiction, but it is fiction. I'm not saying that very clearly, I don't think, but I don't know how else to say it.
Well, I hear that. And the Arch Administrator, the next story, this definitely seems real. This seems like something that could really happen for sure.
Well, you know, it was like it started out as just – it's kind of – a humorous take on Kafka or something, you know, like bureaucracy and I hate appointments. I hate offices. I hate dentists, not because of the pain. I just don't like waiting in waiting rooms. I don't like going to the mechanic to drop off a car. I have an aversion to all that kind of stuff. I'm better about it now, but when I was writing the story, it was very much like I'm just going to see where this goes with a guy who has irritable bowel syndrome having to go to an office for a reason that may not be clear at first, and that when he gets there, it turns out that the guy he has to see is even more, you know, just I was just trying to see how much I could like take that situation and make it, I mean, maybe not interesting, but just see where it took me. And it fits in with the others kind of in a weird way, because it's about, again, it's about home and there's like a father figure. He's the arch administrator, Mr. Bronson,
mm-hmm.
who is this name. It is a bureaucrat of something called the, I can't remember, the office of the arch administrator, which is, what does that mean? You know, it's just a bureaucratic office, which basically is there to impede, you know, what you need done.
Right. It's like, we're going to fix this. Uh-huh. Sure. We believe you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out his problems are nameless, but far greater than the main characters.
You mentioned Kafka a moment ago. Who are some of the writers that you enjoy that you like to read?
My favorite writer is out of fashion right now, Alice Munro.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think she's someone who I go back to and reread. I really love John Cheever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I read a lot. I read a lot of popular fiction. I read a lot of mysteries. I read science fiction. I read literature. I read, I read three or four books at a time.
And mm-hmm.
there's just too many.
I love it.
Thomas Hardy.
You sound like me.
Thomas Hardy, you know.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I like John Sanford for thrillers.
Do you like the
Or Leonard?
Do you like the Prey better than the Flowers books by Sanford?
I like them equally.
Oh, okay.
To tell you the truth.
I really enjoyed this collection, and we never know what to expect. Like the Undelivered Letter, talk about a weird story.
Yeah, well, that's another one. Like, I didn't know where I was going with it. All the stories tie together in a weird way. They don't all tie together equally with each other, but they all kind of converse with one another, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
And that story, you know, ties in pretty closely with one later called The Pale Coast.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like the mirror image, or like it's the seen from an opposite angle. And that's pretty much how I think of, you know, the world within the fiction in stories. It's like it's the real world, but it's just been kind of tilted on its side a degree or two. So that everything is just slightly skewed. It's recognizable, but it's completely different.
I can see the linkage. And when we get to that other story, that is almost psychedelic. That is just like a drug experience.
Yeah, well, it is in a way because of the narcotic effect of the local flora on the woman. She's hallucinating, or she's not. It's never really explained explicitly. I mean, it is explained, but does it cause her to dream? Does it cause her to hallucinate? Does it cause her to reality to shift? I mean.
Mm-hmm.
It's not explained that greatly. Yeah.
I'm guessing that your decision on what order to put the stories in was a decision that you thought about a lot.
I did. I'm not sure I got it right. I had one friend read it and said he thought that the order was perfect. And like I didn't ask him that, but he said, I really like the, I think that you got the order right, regardless of whatever else you did, whether it was good or bad. At least you got the order right.
We have to earn this.
Well, I think that's true with everything. I mean, if you want baby food, you can, you know, there's plenty of books to read. I like reading all kinds of, you know, I like reading all kinds of stuff. But these stories are kind of like, written because they're the kind of thing I like to read.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm a big fan of David Lynch.
Okay.
You know, so it's like that kind of the ambiguity and the space, like we were talking about earlier, the space that you can fill, the reader can fill in the details that are left out.
I hear you. And The Quiet House, I really enjoyed this story, but I'm going to skip past it because the next story, The Lost Brother, was my favorite.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I love
Thank
that
you.
Story. It's so dark.
I call it the stupidest one or the most absurd.
I love one. It.
It's very, you know, it's comically absurd because the premise is, I play it straight. You know, it's a first person narrative of a guy or a being out of a nightmare. You know, his job is to mess with people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's his job. And he acts so arrogant about it. And he acts as though, well, that's, you know, unfortunate, but this is my work. I have to make other lives miserable.
He's like Satan.
We want it all for the good of someone else.
We want something really bad to happen to him.
and it kind of does.
Right. That's why I liked it so much. You know, it's very.
And yet it's a first, you know. Yeah.
It's very satisfying.
Kind of a trick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it was a trick, and I thought of it as a punchline. I knew I was getting to the punchline at the end. Getting there was difficult.
Yeah. Okay, well, I think a lot of us think about getting old and losing our minds. And in the dark hallway, I kept thinking about that because this is another one where we're just kind of going, oh, man, where is this going?
Yeah. And originally, that was the last story I wrote. So again, I wrote that one to kind of tie the themes together in the others, about, you know, language, and that one's full of like that. The first half of it with the old guy sitting in the diner or the coffee shop or whatever it was, overhearing other people's conversations, and not really understanding what they're talking about, and then it turns out that he's not only not understanding what you're talking about, he's probably making up half of it because the reaction of the people in the background doesn't match what is reported as what they have said.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes any sense. And then shifting that to like him going to visit the daughter of his recently deceased wife who have been estranged, and he's trying to figure out why they, you know, what went wrong in their relationship, and it's the daughter doesn't want to talk about it, and like nobody wants to talk, and like again, that's a story where there's a conversation in the car where you don't really know what she said, but the response of the other characters are like indicates what was said. That makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of the story, it's all about like, oh, well, I just don't even want to hear it. You know, it was about, you know, the way that language just doesn't do justice to a lot of what we're trying to express or what we feel in life.
The story Home in the Rain is the shortest story in the book. And it was another favorite of mine. Now, do you see what kind of stuff I like?
Yeah. that story that's the oldest story I started writing that story 30 years ago.
Wow.
And it went through a lot of changes, and I don't even know if I got it. Stylistically it's kind of an outlier too, somewhat in the book. I don't know where it came from.
Well, the guy's clearly a psychopath.
He's something. Mm-hmm. You know, he's something, and he's basically the same guy is in The Lost Brother.
Exactly. That's why I love those two stories so much.
they're the same guy. I mean,
yeah, right.
Just seen their stories are seen through, you know, different parts of a prism, or like mm-hmm. the different pieces in a kaleidoscope, and they've just landed differently.
Well, in The Lost Brother, it's more obvious what's happening at the end. In the second story, we get to the end and we go, oh, no.
Yeah. I think that. I had discussions with my wife who read that, and she's like, I don't understand what happens at the end.
No.
And I said, it's pretty obvious. I mean, you don't know exactly what happened, but something bad happened. And I've gotten enough other people who have told me, like, oh, that's my favorite story, or like, oh, that's chilling, that ending, that last line is so, like, yeah, I sound like I'm tooting my own horn, but I don't feel like I really wrote that. I mean, it came out of the end of the pen.
Nice. I love it. Well, this is a really interesting collection. I really appreciate you talking to us about it, because I thoroughly enjoyed it, and they're all so different. You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, introducing you to your new favorite song. And before I let you go, Jim, you mentioned earlier, I wasn't going to bring it up, but on the back of the book, you say James Wilbur plays guitar in the North Carolina rock band Superchunk. This is his first book. It has nothing to do with music. So I wasn't going to talk about your music at all, but here we are. We're running out of time. What's it been like being in a band like that for you, briefly? What's it been like?
Well, it's been my whole life. My entire adult life has been in this band, and it's been a great life. I mean, I love my bandmates. I've traveled the world. I've put out 15 records at this point. I wouldn't trade it for anything. I'm still at it. I've got shows coming up. So I feel very lucky to be able to have done what I really wanted to do. You know, that's really all I can say.
And you got an opportunity way back at the very beginning to get in that band, and here you are all these years later. And like you said before, you were just going to do it for a little while.
Yeah. Well, I was an English teacher, and I'd gotten a grant to pay for my education if I taught for a certain number of years in Connecticut. But there were no jobs by the time I graduated, because while they were instituting the grant program, they also raised the retirement age.
Oh.
So that the dearth that they expected didn't come about. So there were all these people trying to get jobs. There were no jobs. And so I had to look, I had to document the fact that I was looking for one
right.
for years to get deferments on the grant. But finally I just paid it off. But
wow.
Yeah. I'm glad I ended up in rock and roll rather than education, although it did slow down my writing. But the writing is just for, you know, I do that for fun anyway. So,
well, it's been a pleasure. We really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Vic. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
My guest has been James Wilbur. His new collection, A Pocket Full of Nickels and Related Stories. You heard about it on the Book Nook. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McKeonis.